This is the E-Commerce Brain Trust, a podcast about building momentum online for established consumer brands. Join our hosts and their expert guests for high-level conversations about e-commerce strategies, trends, and innovations. Access our brain trust and boost your brand's e-commerce potential.
Welcome to the E-Commerce Brain Trust podcast. I'm Julie Speer, the head of retail marketplace services here at Acadia. Today, we're joined by Armin Alispayek, the operations team lead for the retail team at Acadia. He's been with us for 7 years, and internally, he's known as Armin.com for his encyclopedic knowledge of Amazon. We love talking to him anytime there's a development in Amazon operations. And most recently, he joined Kiri on the podcast in December to talk about all of the changes for FBA fees for 2024, those changes that we're all seeing come to fruition now. If you haven't listened to that episode, I encourage you to go back and take a listen. I know I personally listened to it a couple of times to help wrap my head around what was coming. And I actually gave it another listen in preparation for today's podcast as well. So it's a great primer for the topics that we're going to be digging into today. So for today, we're going to dig into even more of the changes that we're all experiencing today around Amazon's fulfillment and the costs that we're seeing play out. And we're going to focus really today on the impacts on the 3P model. If you're a 1P vendor, we will be digging into those topics and an episode in the next few weeks. So be sure to tune back in for those. But for today, we're focusing primarily on 3P. So with all of that out of the way, Armin, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you, Julie. Good to be back. And yeah, I think this is our first podcast together. So super excited to begin.
Our first podcast, but not our first deep dive into the mind-numbing intricacies of Amazon operations.
For sure.
Yeah, I think you and I first started talking about those fun topics way back in August of 2016.
Oh, man. Yep. Yeah.
August or July. Yeah. We go way back. I've been looking and following along since this was rolled out by Amazon back in December 2023. And then in the past few weeks, we've really seen a lot of commentary around these changes, especially on LinkedIn. We're seeing a lot of gripes from the industry, from brands and agencies, really concerned about the new fees and the expenses that are coming from leveraging FBA this year. I read a recent article, I think it was by Jason Del Rey in Fortune, that reported that Amazon actually collected over $140 billion from these fees last year. That is a wild amount in fees.
And probably going to be bigger this year as well. So
interesting you say that, because is it Amazon's stance that when it all is said and done, that it'll be less in fees for brands?
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, quite the spin. I mean, truly, they're saying that they're designing these fees so it's a better service for customers in reducing Amazon's cost. And it's really how they're trying to justify all the increases. But we've been through this. We've seen these rounds of fee increases year over year. What's your take on this? Truly, like Amazon playing the Amazon game, or what feels different to you this year?
Yeah, I think like it's a mix of both. Like Amazon has become more creative in finding ways to get more money from sellers this year. That's different. But that creativity has also like made things more complex. This year, for example, we have the rollout phases. Like half of this year, we'll be having like these phases of like, you know, which fees go in effect when. And then some fees are going up, some fees are going down. Overall, it's just much harder to do your math and see what the actual results are. And we still have a few fees that need to kick in. The full picture is not there yet.
Yeah, there's no ripping off the Band-Aid of a fee increase because, what is it, April Fool's Day, we have another round coming, right?
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, lovely. What are you hearing from the brands that your team, as the operations team, you're going to be hearing this the most directly? What are you hearing from the brands that your team is working with? How are they processing these changes and understanding them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we're yet to see, as I said, the full effect of those two notorious fees that need to kick in. So April 1st, that Fool's Day, we have the low-level inventory fee, which is basically going to charge you if you're below a threshold of inventory that Amazon deems necessary. And then June 1st, we also have the returns processing fee that goes into effect. And this is basically a fee for any returns that where you go above a threshold that Amazon determines as the category threshold for your product. I think brands are currently in the midst of playing with the inbound placement fee changes. So this one's pretty big and you can actually play with it a bit because depending on how you create a shipment, the fees are different. So I think brands are currently working on these, just trying to like find the optimal way of what type of shipment they need to send and how to avoid some of the fees. But generally, I think Amazon sellers, they just roll their eyes when Amazon finds new ways to charge them more. And they just see this as part of doing business. And at the end of the day, like Amazon, when they make these announcements, there's no really way back from this. Like the decision is final. And then for brands that work with us, we've really made a comprehensive guide that walks them through each of the changes and puts things on paper so they see the actual numbers. This enables us to look at product level profitability. We can determine next steps accordingly based on this. And then we also have tools at our disposal to track profitability over time. So as all these fees are out of the gate, we'll be able to see how they affect our accounts overall. And another thing we've always cared about a lot is the inventory forecasting. With changes coming to the low level inventory fee, we've further optimized the process so our clients can always have optimal levels of inventory without risking one additional fees, but then on the other hand, stockouts as well, which are even more severe.
Yeah, so it's not made anything even remotely more simple.
Exactly.
is really what you're saying. I mean, with the low level inventory fee, like you said, the brands are almost just rolling their eyes. I had to roll my eyes at that one too. I mean, we have the excess inventory fee. Now we have low inventory fee. It's truly a little Goldilocks situation.
Yeah, whichever extreme you go, like you get charged, you have to be optimal at all times. That's kind of the messaging.
It's crazy. With the backdrop of these shifts, we didn't want really, while it is crazy making and we do want to roll our eyes, we need to find Amazon's here to stay and it plays a massive role in revenue growth and businesses for brands. And we don't want to leave brands feeling hopeless about these updates. There is a path forward. We're going to make sure that our tone is productive and focused on the path forward. You with me on that, Armin?
I am, 100%.
Okay, here we go. We're really going to focus on the opportunities with these fees, with the logistics changes that are coming with them. We're going to go through each of them. And Armin, if you could give a brief overview of the programs and share a high-level description of each, that would be super helpful.
Yeah, so there are four programs that provide hope for better profitability. And one of them, we could say at least provides hope for the planet. So that's good as well. We need a planet.
That's a big statement. Big hope for the planet.
That one actually is called SIP with double P, ships in product packaging. And basically it enables brands to get an incentive if Amazon doesn't have to put a product in their own box to ship to customers. The other program is FBA New Selection. It's been around for a while, but it has some new spins to it. This one waives different fees for new product launches. And then we have two big ones. So one is Amazon Global Logistics, which is basically an end-to-end solution that allows you to ship ocean cargo from China directly to Amazon. And the other one is Amazon Warehouse and Distribution, or AWD, which is essentially an Amazon-owned 3PL solution, which is pretty competitive in the space. So we'll dig into that a bit later.
That one's competitive and more than just a little bit controversial.
100%.
Yeah. We were talking before the podcast, and we thought a fun way to talk about these programs was to put them in the context of like school superlatives. With the end of the school year, my kids are already starting the countdown to the end of the school year. I personally think it's a little early for that. It's not that close, but it's close enough. There's always the senior superlatives, cutest couple most likely to succeed. So we're going to do, for these programs, do a little senior superlative action. For each of these programs, we decided you would come up with a superlative to describe them. You ready for it?
Yeah, that's super fun.
Okay. Right up your alley. Let's start with the first one, SIP. I love a good acronym. Ships in product packaging.
Yep.
What's the superlative you would give this one and why?
As I already said, and probably like expected, the Planet Saver program. It's the program that saves the planet. It's part of the Amazon's Lower the Carbon Footprint mission. The program existed before, so vendors had it and still have it. It's called SIOC, Ships in Own Container. So basically SIOC or SIP products that are those that don't require Amazon to use their own packaging, which in turn results in saving on Amazon fees because they can ship in their own packaging. And the reason I call it the Planet Saver program is because at the end of the day, even if you don't save much on this one, you're saving the planet. So
this is one I can get behind. It's ambitious. It's a lofty goal, but it's an important one. So definitely standing behind this one.
Yep.
So who would you recommend this program for?
Yeah, I think most brands should honestly do their math on this one and see, does it make sense to invest in their product packaging to just meet the requirements and become eligible for SIP? I would also say 100% brands that already have packaging that meets the criteria. There are brands that can already ship in their own packaging. So they would just need to go through the certification process. When I look at brands, like some find it easier to change their packaging and some say, oh my God, that's impossible. Those who are like in the first group and feel like, yes, we can do this easily and we know the cost implications of this should definitely pursue this venture. And then lastly, I would say high volume products. So brands that have high volume products that sell a lot units per month are ideal for this just because of the fact that like this is a per unit shipped fee reduction. The more you ship, the more you save, kind of goes hand in hand with this one.
Excellent. Along the same lines, what would you say are the key benefits of enrolling in SIP?
Yeah. So obviously, as we said, it saves the planet. And then in terms of monetary rewards, so brands can save anywhere from 4 cents to $1.32 per unit shipped, depending on which size tier you're in and what the weight of the product is. This will range from those 4 cents to 132. And then I also feel like there's a branding aspect to this, because when you receive a box that actually doesn't have the Amazon logos and Amazon box, you get to experience the brand a bit more than Amazon as a marketplace.
Interesting. I like that call out. Do you see any challenges or concerns for the program that wouldn't make it a fit for certain brands?
Yeah. So I'm always worried like what Amazon packages go through from the moment they leave the brand's warehouse. The additional packaging from Amazon can really just help prevent the damage and return. For SIP products, brands really need to ensure the packaging is sturdy enough and also monitor, like when you enroll in product selling and it's active, you need to monitor the returns, monitor the damaged packages that come back. And also there's a section on Seller Central where you can monitor the customer feedback, the product. Typically, you'll have returns and return reasons here as well. So that's very important. And then I'm especially concerned about products that are typically in high return categories and also anything that's fragile, anything that can easily be broken or damaged in transit. Either you really make a great, great packaging or you just do it like double your packaging plus Amazon kind of saves the day.
And also just fair warning from a customer perspective, if you're ordering something for a gift for anyone in your home, and it's a SIP product, it's much harder to hide that product and maintain the surprise that should be in it.
Yep.
Just might have had that happen. All right. Now that we have a better grasp of SIP, the Planet Saver program, let's move on to FBA new selection. What would its superlative be?
I call this one the breadcrumbing program. And I call it this way because Amazon kind of feeds brands with crumbs, small fee waivers in order to get more product selection on their marketplace. You know, just their way of saying, hey, launch more products and we'll give you some money back.
An actual instance of fees being returned to brands.
Exactly.
Ooh, okay, a moment there. Who is this program designed for?
Yeah, basically all brand registered sellers are eligible for the program. And honestly, it's fairly low effort to just enroll. So I would say like any brand launching new products should just have this in mind. And even though like it's not a huge money saver, like it doesn't cost you a lot. So everyone should do it.
On that, what are the key benefits to enrolling in this?
Yeah, Amazon offers a 10% rebate on average. So like it can be 12%. Sometimes 8%, depending on category or whatever they see fit there, but 10% rebate on average for sales on these ASINs. You also get a monthly storage waived and also free liquidations. So for example, you launch a product, it doesn't sell well, and you have 50, 100 units left, and you just want to remove it, Amazon would not charge you, and typically they charge for those removals. What's kind of a caveat here is that you're limited by time and by number of units. So it can be 50 or 100 units, depending on which size tier you're in, that Amazon waives these fees for. And then in terms of storage and liquidation, you only get to waive these fees for the first 120 and 180 days of the launch.
Interesting. It does sound like some real key benefits. What would be some limitations or challenges to the program?
Yeah, I don't think like there's any challenges here. It's a bit more work just to get the products enrolled. And the biggest downside, honestly, is just the fact that this is time limited. Total savings at the end of the day like may not be that significant. But still, when you look at the effort, it pays off.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's move on to some of the logistics-focused programs, Amazon Global Logistics. How would you describe that one? What would be the superlative that you would label Amazon Global Logistics?
Yeah, this one is serious and a bit dramatic, I would say. I call it the wild card program just because it's so unpredictable. This program is part of the supply chain by Amazon, and the idea behind it is to provide the service of shipping inventory directly from China to Amazon, all while promising reduced costs and competitive rates by Amazon as well.
Okay, I'm intrigued by the wildcard part of it, though. So what makes it wildcard? Who is it designed for? What are some of the benefits here?
Yeah, I'd say almost anyone who's manufacturing their products in China, especially like less experienced or new companies, because Amazon offers services for each step of the supply chain journey. So pickup, paperwork, customs to delivery, like they all do that for you. I would also encourage like established brands just to look into this and compare Amazon rates to their current providers. There definitely is something very compelling about just having one end-to-end solution provider. And there just has to be some efficiencies in shipping that way versus ship from China, ship to a warehouse, from the warehouse ship to Amazon, breaking the shipment all the time. Definitely more cost involved with that one.
Yeah, so it offers a lot of simplicity, much more efficiency, I would imagine.
Exactly. Yeah. When we look at benefits, like I don't want to sound like an Amazon salesperson, but it's really simple.
You're approaching it.
It should be cost saving compared to like shipping to a US warehouse. But then also Amazon really promises to provide the fastest entry into their network. So when you're shipping regular shipping to Amazon, like your shipments may be delayed or like not prioritized. Seems like when you ship like this, you might even get prioritized. And there's also like automation by Amazon here, because when you ship directly, they will actually split and optimize your inventory placement across multiple fulfillment centers. So you don't have to do that as well. And the cream on top, they will waive the inbound placement fee if you use this service. So use our service and don't get charged one of the new fees we have introduced.
Huh.
Yeah, I'll pause there. Like, you probably have a comment.
I'm entering the zone of skepticism. And I think it definitely leads to a lot of the skepticism that I think many of us feel, and I've been reading about relative to the Amazon warehousing and distribution program, which we'll get mm-hmm. to next as well. It seems like fees and program, the two are a little too closely tied and a little coercive, it feels like. What's your take?
100%. Like, it's kind of like, let us introduce these fees and let us introduce these programs to avoid these fees the only way you can. So it's like, here are options, but here are no options as well. I mean, typical Amazon, but honestly, as much as evil this sounds, I feel like they just found a way to get more competitive with other service providers in the space. And they just do it more streamlined and a bit cheaper. You don't have to do it, right? But in order to actually save, it's best if you do.
Right. Well, looking at the Amazon Global Logistics, are there any challenges?
Yeah, for this one, I would say just shipping directly from China to Amazon. This means you never get to see or touch your inventory, which can be very dangerous in some circumstances. You have way less control over the whole process, and it can just overall be pretty challenging, especially if you're selling some of the sensitive product categories that require additional quality control. Imagine you're selling a baby product and you never see it, and it ships from China to Amazon and customers start receiving like hundreds of units and most of it is broken or has a defect or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, quality control here and ownership of your product, your brand at any point, I would think that that is a massive vulnerability in a program like this.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on to the fourth and final of the programs and the most controversial. I don't know if that's your superlative. I'll leave it to you. So we've gone over the global logistics and it's for a very specific type of seller that wants end-to-end for products coming from China, ultimately going straight into the hands of Amazon's customers and the easiest process possible. But now we're moving into Amazon warehousing and distribution. And I've seen a lot of chatter about this in the past couple of weeks. How would you describe it? What superlative would you give to AWD? Not all-wheel drive.
I call this one Uncharted Waters program. Due to like very little social proof, this is actually working and it just works. We are not sure. On paper, this program looks great. It's a cost-effective storage solution. It allows you to ship to multiple sales channels. You also have like the option to automatically replenish your FBA and multi-channel fulfillment inventory. It's a dream, logistical dream. But as I said, uncharted waters, just because we don't have a lot of feedback from other brands or other customers, other users of this program to know like that it actually works.
Who do you see this as being designed for?
If we go to the previous group of people who actually use Amazon Global Logistics, it makes all the sense in the world to couple this with AWD just because it's kind of a perfect pairing. But I would also say then brands struggling with profitability and also brands who are just open to testing new logistics solutions because there's still lack of proof this program works. I'd recommend slow rollout with a selection of products. So test, learn, and go from there instead of like going, okay, let's just onboard everything we have to this tool or this program.
And what do you see as the ultimate benefits of enrolling in this?
Amazon actually names a lot. There's a longer list here provided by Amazon as well. If you couple this program with other Amazon programs, you already see the direction of this. Like if you couple this with Amazon Partner Carrier or Amazon Global Logistics, you can actually save 25% on the storage through AWD and then also 15% on processing and transportation. Only from there, like, you know, use Amazon services plus AWD. This is how much you save. And then on top of that, like all of the new fees that Amazon has introduced, like you get a waiver on many of these. So storage, you get like storage utilization surcharges waived. Low inventory level costs are waived. You don't get storage overage costs because Amazon is kind of manipulating the inventory there. You don't have the FBA inbound placement costs when you send these AWD shipments. And also, and I think this one is a big one as well, for the storage itself, you can save 38% compared to like regular FBA storage fees, like during the non-holiday season. And then Q4, this is a number made by Amazon, 80% savings during the holiday season on storage fees. And we see a surge in fees happen like in Q4 because everybody wants to send a lot of inventory to kind of meet the demand and allow for growth. And then what this results in is like a huge spike in fees for the storage. So reducing that by 80% during the holiday season can make your year so much better.
With all those benefits, why would you not do this?
Yeah, the biggest concern right now is whether this works well or not, especially the fact that your FBA inventory gets to be auto-replenished through the program, so you don't control when Amazon sends your product to FBA. We all know forecasting is a complex process and Amazon sometimes won't have all the information the brand has. My seasonality, my current trends, my marketing efforts on social or everywhere else, they won't have these data points. So there may be issues with stockouts because of this. Amazon is run on algorithms and data that they have. When they don't have all of the data that the brand could have, it might result in some issues with your product actually being available all the time, which can make a huge impact on your sales velocity and just the momentum.
So the 3P version of the 1P issue of POs getting canceled even during like a brand's high season and selling at a high velocity product. And
yeah, I wouldn't say like Amazon would not order or like, you know, would not ship, but I think there can be issues maybe on a product level even where they just don't ship. And then like there's always this, Amazon has their own games and they know what their capacity is at fulfillment centers.
Exactly.
Your product may not be prioritized just because like they have a better seller from some other brand. You're always kind of a victim of this game as well.
Well, anytime you put the word auto replenish
yeah.
in a descriptor for how the processes run, it's concerning.
Yep.
The bots are running things and that gives pause. There's a lot of reason to be enticed and to consider the program, but that one word right there is a lot of reason to give pause.
Yep.
One question on this, can you opt in at the product level or do you opt in at the account level? Did you mention that already?
You can do it like on the product level. It's a 3PL, but in order to like get all the benefits, Amazon does require you to have a specific percentage of your product using the program.
Okay.
If you're just like kind of sending 10% of your whole product sales, probably you won't get the benefits. I think it's 70% is the threshold.
All right. There is room, though, to test and dip your toe in the water.
Yep.
Well, we've been through a lot of complexity with all the changing fees, new programs, and all the considerations brands have to make and how they're going to respond. I have one last question for you. Put yourself in the shoes of a brand selling on Amazon. How do you view all of these changes in terms of the relationship between Amazon, the brand, and ultimately the shared end customer receiving the brand's product?
Yeah, that's a good one. If I've learned anything about Amazon in the last 8 years, it's that it evolves all the time and brands just need to keep up with this space. So just from a logistics standpoint, what we've discussed now, brands now have so many choices compared to when I started my Amazon journey. If you're a brand selling on Amazon and you're doing the same things you were doing 10 years ago, it's really time for some deep thinking and analysis. And brands just need to explore their options and see what works best, what's actually moving the needle, instead of defaulting to what works years ago. Amazon-made solutions may not fit everyone, but I often feel there's this resistance to even trying just because Amazon is seen as this bad guy that's taking over the world. So you just don't do it because of that, which has its merits and its own story for sure. Also, if we look at the new services Amazon provides now, we see there's a lot more diversity. They understand brands need to sell on other channels as well. Now they have offerings to support this. It's also a message for brands who rely on Amazon as the only sales channel. It's really time, like you need to diversify your offerings and sales channels to meet your customers wherever they are. Don't rely on one channel only.
Yeah, we've been saying this for a few years. Like Amazon, absolutely, as a part of your overall brand strategy, absolutely, it needs to be, for the vast majority of brands, a part of the playbook. But to put all your eggs in the Amazon basket,
yeah,
not only will it present challenges for you, but it doesn't need to be that way. With the growth of retail media networks, there's a lot more opportunity out there. Walmart is advancing in their sophistication and the opportunities it offers monthly now, and Target as an option. There are just so many more opportunities out there now. So diversifying your offer, having a true, robust omnichannel strategy, it's not only something that's a necessity, it's a real, true opportunity. So I hear you on that. I support that stance, Armin, and I am really grateful for your time and walking us through all this. You have proven the .com-ness of your nickname, Armin.com. I can see and appreciate the encyclopedic knowledge that you brought to the table today. And I can appreciate kind of the frustration and confusion that a lot of brands and sellers are experiencing with all of these changes. So grateful for the expertise that you and your entire operations team offer all of us on the daily. So thank you for your time today and for sharing your expertise.
Thank you, Julie. It's been a joy. And yeah, looking forward to the next one on the 1P side.
Oh, more challenge to dig into. Thanks, everyone.